As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
We click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. We've got the draft coming up here in less than a month. We've got the NBA playoffs. The finals are starting soon. Better get that subscription at theathletic.com/NBA show. Today, I've got my good friend Alex Spears with me. Alex, what's up, man?
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. We also have Matt Babcock of basketballnews.com. You can find him on Twitter at MattBabcock11. Matt, what's up, man?
Hey, not too much. Just get my morning going. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Man, this draft is, to me, it's been one of the more fun drafts to cover because there's not a clear consensus about what's going on up at the top. So we'll start there. This draft has been framed by the national media as a three-person draft with Chet, Paolo, and Jabari. Do you see the same way, or do you see there being like somebody else in there, or is this more of a two-man draft? How do you view this draft?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I agree with you. It's a fun draft. I mean, I think the parity at the top always, you know, leads to interesting conversations and debates. And I like all three of those guys a lot, and they're all so different. I also am very high on Jaden Ivey, and I love his upside, his athleticism, and just the fact that, you know, his style of play. I mean, it's a guard-driven league where a lot of the game is predicated on key and three, which Jaden Ivey fits that the NBA game better than he does college. And so I see it more as a four-player tier one, certainly a lot of parity.
With that, like when you say you see Ivey as a tier one prospect, do you think there are teams that see him that way? Like if a team moved up, they would potentially be moving up for Ivey as opposed to one of those bigs?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a discrepancy all year just on my impression to speaking with people, you know, NBA scouts, you know, sitting at games with them. And everybody seemed to be very, very high on Jaden Ivey. I mean, I've heard a number of times teams saying, or maybe it's just individual scouts. I don't know if the team as a whole thinks this, but a lot of scouts have said they've got Ivey one or two. Mm-hmm. I've heard that a lot. And, the whole narrative that Chet is, you know, the clear-cut number one or absolutely one or two. There's been a lot of NBA people that don't agree with that. I'm high on Chet. I don't see him as the clear cut number one. But like I said before, I think that top four, it's all relatively close to me. And I'd be willing to listen to arguments on, you know, which guys fit certain teams better than the other, because it's close.
I'm always interested in like hearing about teams' big boards, because you, like, from the outside perspective, you would think, like, why would a team ever give away this information? So like, how does that come about, or how do those rumors start, and how do you know, because you've been doing this for a while now, like, how do you know it's smoke screen versus not smoke screen? Like, how can you feel good about that?
Well, I mean, I think obviously, you know, it depends on who I'm talking to. I mean, I trust certain guys better than others just because the, you know, how established the relationship is. And generally how it works is, you know, you give a little, you take a little, you know, give and take type deal. And so, you know, I think a number of NBA scouts and executives will give me some information. So I give them some. And so, again, it really just depends on the relationship. I mean, I do believe that there's teams that will mislead people like myself and do smoke screens. But, you know, based on like the evaluation, what I'm talking about with Ivy and Holmgren, it's been more of when I've been at those games and it's at halftime, hey, what'd you think? That kind of stuff. And just everything all together. And I was at the Big Ten tournament the whole week. And I mean, I would be in the concourse and everybody was talking about Ivy like he was, you know, one of the guys. And so I do feel pretty comfortable in that same. I don't know if Ivy goes in the top three. But there are a number of teams throughout the league. If that, you know, if two or three were to become available, I think there's a number of teams that would target Ivy as the guy.
Is there anybody in the top three right now that you think would take Ivy over one of the bigs?
I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, you know, you're Oklahoma guy. I mean, Sam Presti is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
You never know what he's going to do. I mean, Ivy feels like a Sam Presti kind of guy, even though, you know, their on-ball creators are set with Giddey and Shea. I wouldn't be surprised if Sam were to do something like that and shock the world. I mean, he's done it a number of times before with different decisions. And I do think the upside's there. So, I mean, if you're valuing a potential star, you know, a guy that's an on-ball creator, I mean, I think it's an interesting idea at least.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of differing opinions on the top three big men, Chet, Paolo, and Jabari. Could you first give your thoughts on how it might play out on draft night if those three do go in the first three, and then give us your opinion on those three?
Yeah, my expectation is Jabari at number one. I'm sure Jeff and John are weighing out all the different options. I mean, just kind of like we are on all these shows, right? But I do think it's going to be Jabari. I think he's slightly ahead of the other two. I mean, just an incredible two-way player that fits the modern game as a stretch four. And I'm really buying the defense. I mean, I think he could defend everybody, and he's really chippy and tough. I mean, I really, really like Jabari a lot. And I think he's got a lot of room for growth on the offensive end. I think he'd add some more to his arsenal. But at the very least, I mean, the guy is just an absolute sniper as a 6'10 fluid athlete, you know? And so, really like, Jabari. As far as number two, I mean, I'm not sure. We've got Paolo right now. My colleague Derek Murray, I mean, he's pushing Paolo on me on that pick pretty hard, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Paolo, if it was Chet, or if, like I said, you know, he shocked everybody, went Jaden Ivey, or traded the pick. I mean, Sam's always active on the phones, looking to maximize, you know, each and every asset that he has. So two's making it tricky with Sam. And three, I think if Chet's there, I think Chet will be the guy. Probably Paolo, if not. I you know, similar to what I was saying before, Houston's got, I mean, they got their guards set. I mean, I don't know if Ivey fits there well. Sacramento. Another wild card. I don't, if Ivy's the last man standing, I don't think he's a great fit there either. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had some shakeups towards the top with some trades.
Yeah. What are these three like personality wise? Are there any potential concerns about any of them?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, different, seem like different, all different types of players and personalities and backgrounds, but I've never heard anything of those four that's like overwhelmingly negative or red flag type stuff.
I wanted to ask you about Banchero because you just brought him up as a possibility at two. And I feel like you're one of the few people that I've heard that has brought that up as a possibility. I mean, looking at a lot of the national mocks, it seems like he only gets mentioned at three and barely even is being considered in the top two. And as you just mentioned, like we've heard teams that have Jabari at the top of their board, Chet at the top, Ivy at the top. For some reason, there seems to be relatively little buzz about Banchero, despite him fitting the profile of like a top pick with his isolation scoring. Why do you think that is? Like, do you think there are teams that do have Banchero at the top of their board?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've heard stuff like teams think he's the safest pick. And I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with it, but I mean, I've heard statements like that, you know, this guy, you know, I've heard stuff like, hey, this guy will average 20 a game next year, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there are people that think that highly of him. I mean, I have him more of like in that group rather than being solidified as one, two, or three. I mean, the one thing I do like about him a lot is I do trust the fact that at the very least, he's going to be a guy that can create offense for you. I mean, you can give him the ball and he can make something happen. And there's just not many players like that. Even though the game's gone away from being, hey, just throw him in the post and isolate and see what he can do, it's still a valuable skill of a guy, especially at that position, that can create offense and is versatile. I think he got early, he got a little bit of a knock of the defense being a big red flag. I'm not as concerned with it as some are. And so that's probably one thing that I think, you know, might hold him back a little bit, is that idea of people believing that. And then as far as, you know, with the media and social media and NBA Twitter having such like a prevalent place in this community now, there's a lot of groupthink, you know, and I think narratives kind of take on a life of their own that doesn't necessarily match what NBA teams think. And so I think that's probably part of it too.
So you were at the draft combine this past week in Chicago, and one of the stories that came out of the combine was how few prospects participated in the 5-on-5. With that in mind, when we hear about certain guys who really stood out, like how much does that really matter if so few guys were participating? Like I think about Jalen Williams, who everyone was talking about. Should I be thinking of him as like a lottery prospect now, or has that become kind of overblown because there were just so few prospects to talk about from those 5-on-5s?
Well, I mean, it was very competitive play. And so, I mean, you know, scouting, I mean, I you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the best prospects. I mean, for me to get something out of from a scouting perspective. And so I do think it's, you know, theoretically it's possible a guy plays there and moves himself up dramatically. With Jalen Williams specifically, I mean, he's getting a lot of buzz. I think part of it was he came from a smaller school, smaller conference. He's kind of got like the wow factor right now. Everybody's kind of like blown away. This is the new hot name. I think it's going a little overboard, but he's certainly helped himself. I mean, we moved him from 47 to 32, which I mean is a huge jump. I mean, and I'm still, it seems like I'm lower on him than, you know, the rest of the NBA draft, you know, media at this point. I'm not quite ready to go too much more extreme yet, but again, you know, the draft, it takes one team to solidify the guy's, you know, ultimate standing, right? And so if somebody takes him in the lottery, he's a lottery pick.
So in every draft process, there's a couple guys that skyrocket up draft boards. One way you can do that is by showing out at the combine. Another way is to excel in individual workouts. Given that few projected first-round picks participated in the 5-on-5 combine, who are one or two guys that you expect will climb as these individual workouts start?
Well, I think one part of it, too, that you're missing on that is during this time, teams really dig deep on background work, and they get a chance to sit down and pretty much drill these guys in interviews. And so they get a grip of what the kids are all about. And so arguably could be the biggest difference maker with guys moving up, turning down. I mean, one guy that I think's really helped himself in that regard is Malachi Branham from Ohio State. He is blowing people away. Just a really mature, poised kid. Obviously a proven scorer too, that second part of the year at Ohio State. I mean, he had some huge games. And so, I think just really kind of peeling back the curtain on the kids' lives and their personalities. I mean, that's a huge part of it. And then as far as, you know, the workouts, I think it's a better opportunity for the guys that like a Jalen Williams that is trying to figure out what his range is. Guys like that will play, you know, the competitive 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3. That definitely is an opportunity to move up. But you know, these top tier guys, they're going to do 1-on-0 workouts for very few teams, pick and choose who they're interviewing with. And so, you know, a lot of the work is done for a big bulk of the draft.
I want to ask you about AJ Griffin, because obviously a talented shooting prospect, but there are legit concerns about his athleticism that seem to be sapped somewhat from these injuries going back to high school. A lot of the projection with him, like when people have him as like some people have him as a top 5 pick or as a top 10 pick, a lot of that projection seems to be based on him regaining some of that athleticism at some point. How confident are you in that? And how do you even project something like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting one. I mean, just his body type alone. I mean, I remember the first time I saw him in person, he was one of the guys, I didn't see him in high school because he was battling injuries and he hadn't played a whole lot. And so the first time I saw him in person was opening night at the Madison Square Garden this year. And he didn't play well that game, but I mean, just watched him in pregame warmups. The kid is huge. I mean, he is just thick top to bottom. And I mean, I'm not sure what to make of it. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I mean, for Pencilman at the three, he's a physical three. And then, you know, once he finally turned it on this season, I mean, just an incredible shot maker that could create his own shot. And so from an athletic standpoint, I don't know. I think he's just a decent athlete. I don't think it's a big concern, but I don't think it's a huge strength of his. But the size as a wing and the ability to hit shots, that's definitely valuable. I mean, it's the most valuable skill, in my opinion, is being able to be a shot maker with range and be able to create your own shot. But is that the only thing he does? I think that's my question with him. Is he a one-trick pony that's really good at this one thing that's very valuable? And so I think that's sort of the juggling act, at least that I'm kind of doing with him.
Yeah. And then with age, like he's one of the younger guys in the draft. I'm just curious how much you take into consideration, like the runway that some of these guys have. Because you see guys pop early that are, you know, 22, 23 that come in and they make an instant impact. But how much does age factor in whenever you're like making a big board or when you're thinking about these prospects?
You know, it does. I mean, it's an element I look at. There's no doubt about it. I would say this. I'm not one that will write a guy off because he's older. I think it changes the evaluation a little bit. I mean, it puts more pressure on, okay, how ready is this guy to go? And there's probably not as much room for growth just naturally. And then on the same side, I'm not going to get overly excited with a guy just because he's young. I mean, everybody's been young at some point or another. Doesn't mean there's everybody's a good player eventually, right? And so, I mean, it's definitely a variable in the equation. I just try not to go too high or low on really any one element. It's just sort of a culmination of it all.
So you have Ty Washington higher on your current mock draft going 10th. And then you have Jeremy Sochan going lower than most at 18. Can you walk me through both of these prospects? I know they're very different, but can you walk me through these guys and then talk me into like why you have Ty higher? It feels like they're kind of flip-flop from maybe a more conventional mock draft.
No, sure. I mean, one thing with Ty, I mean, I've really gotten to know him well the last year, so I followed him closely in high school. And so one is I'm just personally a big fan of his. I just like his game. I like his ability to translate to the next level. And I think one big part that makes me like him more than most is that getting to know him in high school so well, I really bought into the idea of him being a floor general. Whereas in Kentucky, they brought in Sevier Wheeler, supposedly, committed to playing him major minutes, which he's an undersized point guard. So he naturally had to put Ty off the ball. And so I think people that didn't know him in high school got the wrong impression of what he was all about and kind of messed things up for him a little bit. And then also too, just, this time of year, we really shift from being primarily my rankings to a combination of my opinions with what I think the guy's actual market value is. And so Ty's well thought of around the NBA. I mean, I don't know if everybody feels the same way as I do, but I do think he's in the mix for, I mean, I've heard San Antonio likes him, I've heard Washington likes him. I think he's in that mid late lottery type range. As far as Sochan, I'm a huge Sochan fan. And with him slipping to 18, it was really just a circumstantial deal. We went pick by pick, and it's just kind of how it unfolded. I mean, I would not be surprised to see him up in that Ty range in the late lottery. I think he's a very worthy prospect. I mean, defensively, I've never seen a kid move his feet as well as that guy for his size. And I think offensively, he's got potential of being very, very versatile.
Could you talk a little bit more about his shooting specifically? Because I know for a lot of Thunder fans and probably fans of other teams, they worry about guys who just like don't seem to have a shot yet and where people question, will they ever become a shooter? Could you talk a little bit about the process of projecting guys who necessarily maybe didn't shoot amazing in college and how you can project that for the pros?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, I look at it case by case, but I mean, you look at the basic mechanics. Is it something that can be cleaned up, that could become more repeatable? And then also too, doing the background work, getting to know kids, getting to know their personality. Are they workers? Are they disciplined? Are they, are they coachable? All these little things like that, that would lead to somebody improving at something, right? And so, combination of a few different things when I'm looking at guys and projecting their trajectory as shooters.
So how do you feel about Sochan from that respect? Like, do you think he could become like a solid, 35-36% 3-point shooter?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance. I mean, it's not broken right now. I mean, I think he's capable of shooting it a little bit. And I remember I was with Mike D'Antoni at one point. He had said something about big guys shooting the ball. And it's like, they don't need to be knockdown guys. They need to shoot it enough so that you guard them. That's where the value comes in, to get the floor spacing. And I do think Sochan will be able to shoot it enough that you have to guard him, which gives you the spacing you need to run your offense.
So if you had to bet on one of these three players to be a quality starter in the NBA, which one would you pick? Johnny Davis, Malachi Branham, or AJ Griffin?
Ooh. I think Johnny Davis is probably the safest pick. You know, I think he's ready to go right now. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a starter next year. I mean, just he's got size, he's tough, does a lot of little things. Offensively, I don't know if he's going to be quite as dynamic as a lot of people were hoping when he was blowing up during the midseason. But he's a good player at the very least. I think, you know, Branham and AJ Griffin, I think their upside is pretty high. But they're younger. I mean, a little bit. I mean, the sample size with both of them is still relatively small. I like all three, honestly. But Johnny Davis, I think, would be the safest pick.
What about the effective environments, whether that's like a specific college team environment or playing in the G League Ignite or in the NBL? Are there any guys that you feel their draft stock is low or lower than it should be just based on their environment they're coming out of that maybe didn't highlight their strengths as well?
Yeah, maybe Jaden Hardy. I don't know. I mean, he's so hyped up going in. I mean, you know, we were part of that as well. We had him, I think, at number three going into the season, and you know, he was playing with grown men all year, and he's clearly behind from a fundamental basketball IQ standpoint, even though he's got a lot of talent. And so maybe he would have been a little better off going to college rather than playing against a seasoned vets.
So last question. Are there any players in the late first round or early second round that could surprise and contribute right away?
Oh, let me see here. who do we have in the late first? I mean, EJ Liddell, Ohio State, we got him at 22. I mean, I think he's ready to contribute as like a role player. Wendell Moore for Duke, I think he's another guy. I mean, his story's been pretty interesting. I've followed him since high school, and you know, when he first got to Duke, I thought he was just like a tough slasher. I mean, he's gotten so much better. He did a lot of on ball. I mean, really handled a lot of their point guard duties this year, which I never thought I would say about Wendell Moore. And I think he's a guy that could fill a role. So those are the two guys that pop up.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us today on the Saturday Slam and Jam. You can follow Matt on Twitter at MattBabcock11 and read all of his stuff at basketballnews.com. Thanks so much, man.
Hey, thank you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, Al. We know one of the teams is going to be in the NBA Finals right now. We're recording this on Friday. And to me, you got to get somebody that's invested in this, somebody that has poured their heart and soul into this team. And I think the right guy is Andy Liu. You can follow him on Twitter at AndyKHLiu. He's the co-host of the Light Years podcast. If you're a Warriors fan, you know this guy. Andy, thanks so much for coming on, man.
No, thanks for having me. It feels like I'm the one that's playing now. But it does. I think if you're a fan of the Warriors the last 20 years, which is probably when I started rooting for this team, it feels pretty good. There's something different, I think, about rooting for a team when they're really bad, which the Warriors were, and then the greatest team ever, yeah. Right? Which is what I think they were, and then really bad again, which is what they were literally 2 years ago, and then now it seems like they're back at the top or close to it. So a pretty sweet, I think, revival of the good old times for those guys.
Yeah, so let's start there. I wanted to give you an opportunity to just attempt to put into words what this playoff run has meant to a fan that's followed this team for 20 years. You know, going through the rise of the team from the beginning with Steph and Dre, and then the 73 win team, the Kevin Durant years, then all the injuries and all the losing, and now you're back in the finals again. How special has this playoff run, you know, compared to other years?
Oh man, I mean, you almost, that's almost a lead, right? If the Warriors end up winning this championship, I think it's 2A, 2B. I think you have a lot of Warriors fans out there that will probably say this run itself is probably going to be the most fun, most entertaining, most fulfilling, you could say. But I like to think of it from this perspective. It's when people talk about the Warriors, fans and media and really anybody else, even people that don't watch basketball, they always talk about the Warriors as the Warriors. You brought up Steph Curry, but this team is really about the Warriors. It's about the team, the organization, and everyone. And I think that's pretty cool. I just don't think we see that anymore in sports. I think we're so used to seeing, especially in the NBA, where all these guys, you know, just think about it here. Warriors have played Chris Paul, who's been on 16 teams, James Harden, who's on his 15th, and he's quit on all of them. LeBron James, who you could argue is the greatest player of this generation, has played in four different jerseys. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's always, I think that part is really cool when you're a Warriors fan, because you're rooting for these guys and they're all on the same team. Yeah. They've always been, especially those top three guys. That right there, it almost feels kind of like a movie, because you see them fail, right? It's not really a movie if these guys always win, mm-hmm. right? So they fail, they come back, they fail, they come back, and they're always going to be wearing the same jersey. I think that's really cool. I just don't think that's going to happen ever again, especially in basketball. So I think that's, when people talk about this team, they'll always talk about the team versus one guy. And I think that's awesome.
And even as like a non-Warriors fan, like I was making this case to OKC fans who probably have, you know, reasons to hate the Warriors. But like, even as a non-Warriors fan, like this is the type of team that I want in the NBA. Like I want a team that stays together this long, because even as not being a fan, even if you're a hater of this team, like it's just fun because you've known these guys for so long. Like, we've lived through it, even as non-Warriors fans, going through the ups and downs. And it's just so much more compelling as a story than a team that just comes together in a year and does whatever.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you've got 85 draft picks, so you can definitely do that. I mean, that's the goal for the next the next five seasons, right? Presti's got that. You know, he's got that under control. He always seems to draft the right guys. But, I mean, for example, let's talk Klay Thompson and what that means. We saw last night, Klay wasn't even supposed to get interviewed, and Ernie Johnson went out of his way to talk to him. And I think you saw his, I think he was literally about to cry before he turned away.
Yeah, he really did seem like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was his emotions all year. I think for those that, you know, isn't keeping up with the Warriors second in, second out, like I am, like he had a really rough time going through both injuries, especially that second one when he was so close to coming back and he ended up tearing that Achilles. I think he spent a lot of time sitting with the team and some days just really unhappy, just not liking basketball. And I think that moment for him was amazing. Yeah. You don't get that moment if you're just, like Alex is saying, rooting for a guy that just joined this team a year ago. The Warriors love that. And Steph Curry, you saw Steph Curry looking at him the way he did. Mm-hmm. You get those moments because we've seen Klay Thompson struggle his first couple of years in the NBA. And then we saw him become a playoff legend, right? And then we saw him essentially go through the worst of times in terms of basketball and then come back again. I think that stuff, I mean, I can see a lot of Warriors fans just kind of feeling the same way he did. And you don't get that stuff, man. You don't get that stuff in sports. That stuff is like out of a, I don't know what type of Hollywood script that you want to, it's like out of a Coach Carter movie or something. I don't know. It's
Coach Carter, some kind of Disney Channel movie or something. Yeah,
yeah, definitely Disney. Yeah, yeah, definitely Disney.
So for an outsider, there were a lot of surprises this season with the Warriors. You had Jordan Poole's leap, Wiggins playing well enough to make an all-star game as a starter, Kevon Looney putting up massive games in the playoffs, GP2 establishing himself as elite perimeter defender in the league. As a fan watching this team every night, which individual season on the Warriors was most surprising to you? Or do you feel like you predicted all of this?
Nah. Well, I say a lot of stuff. I say a lot of stuff, and I only bring up the stuff that I'm right about. Yeah. So that's definitely how I roll. Angel Wiggins, I don't think it's close this postseason. He's been the second most consistent player on this team. And you could probably make an argument that he could have been finals MVP, like the way that Andre Iguodala had that final. Right. It's a funny thing about the Warriors. You can always just give anybody finals MVP, even though it should be Steph. But it's beside that point, like he's been incredible. And I think part of that is he's bought into the Warriors system in a way that I don't think anybody would. Like if I were a number one overall pick that I know I can average 20 plus points in the league and I'm getting paid $35 million, I wouldn't do dirty work. Like he's guarding Luka Doncic full court. He's getting 30 dropped on him every game. Yeah. He's forcing tough shots, but he's still going after it. Like if I were him, I don't know if I'd do that, right? But I think for someone like let's be real, guys. Wiggins was a laughing stock before he got traded to the Warriors. I mean, everything about him was kind of a joke.
It and took a lottery pick to get him to your team.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I forgot about that. I mean, the Warriors hated D'Lo. I mean, it was. I mean, talk about a terrible fit. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even happy about that trade. I wasn't. I wanted him traded before the season started to get him and the first round pick that turned into Kuminga. I was like, get these guys off the team. Like, there's no way, right, that these guys are going to be good enough to. They need a fourth guy, and not that never happened. And part of that is and that regular season you brought up him being an all-star. Yeah, I mean, he good regular season. But he wasn't
K-pop all-star.
Yeah, right. So there was a lot of I think the Warriors are the best social media. They have the best social media PR staff in the NBA. And so that's part of the reason, even though he's played well. But I think it's the postseason. It's the 16-game player that he's become that I didn't see coming. I don't know if anybody saw coming. Yeah. So I think that's the coolest story of this team.
So in the last couple seasons, one of the subplots for the Warriors was the anger and frustration that some fans had directed at Steve Kerr. You tweeted about how much better of a job Kerr has done this season. What specifically do you think has been the difference in Kerr's coaching performance this season compared to the past couple?
Yeah, you guys are locked into this team. Like, yeah, that was a huge frustration. I think, well, first things first, I mean, Joe Lacob hired a bunch of great coaches this season. Kenny Atkinson, who's essentially a head coach. Yeah. Jamal Mullally, who they got from Toronto, he's going to be a head coach at some point in his career. And then a couple other developmental coaches that help guys out like Wiggins and Looney. I think the big thing about, I think the difference in coaching is that I think we see the urgency with what Steve Kerr believes about this team. I think he understands this team is not as good as the other ones. Mm-hmm. I think that's facts. Like, even if Boston or Miami make it through, I don't think the Warriors are like incredibly favorite to beat either team. I think there's still a chance those two teams were like, this is not a foregone conclusion. Yeah. 14, 15, 16, 16, even when they lost, right, in those seasons. And then the KD years, pretty much a foregone conclusion. That team was just wrecking through everyone. I think Steve Kerr understands that he has to change things up. Like the way that they ran the zone scheme against Luka Doncic, they had never done that mm-hmm. before, ever. In any situation previously, the amount of pick and roll that they ran, even though the offensive system is about motion and passing it to different guys and all of that, you know, kumbaya stuff and getting everybody involved, he ran the most pick and roll that he's ever had. I think about 20-30% more, and they essentially attack Luka nonstop. So I think that type of urgency, it's just his maturity as a coach. One of the best coaching performances I've ever seen in this series against the Mavs, easily could have gone 6 or even 7. But he shortened the rotation. He called timeouts whenever a lead went down to 10. And he threw out a defensive scheme every game that essentially was like, hey, I'm going to try to win this one like it's a game 7. And that's why the series won 5.
How much more confident do you feel, you know, playing against a bigger team with the way that Kevon Looney has played over the last few weeks?
Oh, my goodness. You know, he was out of the rotation against Denver.
Yeah.
And out of the rotation against Memphis pretty much until game 6, when the Warriors pretty much had to win that game or they go back to Memphis and probably get their ass whooped. And he grabbed 22 rebounds and hasn't left the rotation. It doesn't make any sense because he's been good all year. He's actually played 82 games, but he wasn't this good.
Yeah. Kerr doesn't have to announce the starters anymore. You know,
yeah,
like, that's how good
right.
he's been.
Yeah, remember we're back and forth every day, kind of worrying. I actually thought they should have went with a small line. This is why I'm behind a mic and not doing what he's doing, right? Amongst other reasons. So interesting matchup because Robert Williams is a little bit like Jaren Jackson, even though he's hobbled a little bit. Jaren Jackson gave the Warriors a crazy amount of trouble. The Warriors also got some incredible offensive rebounders with Looney and Wiggs. I don't know how possible that is against Horford and Robert Williams and Grant Williams. I think those are all interesting matchups, like in the details. Against that team. But yeah, Kevon Looney, man, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. I don't know how much money he's going to get. I think teams are still undervaluing him, but DeAndre Ayton and Rudy Gobert in the postseason, always pretty sketchy. And then you look at Kevon Looney, you're like, oh, that guy can't get more than $6 million. Are we sure? I hope he gets more, man. He seems like such a good person. It's been a rough career for him the first couple of years. So it'd be cool if he got some money.
I wanted to ask you about their depth because they finished the conference finals with 3 rotation players out with Iguodala, Otto Porter Jr., and GP2. We did get a report on Friday from Shams that GP2 would be back for the finals as soon as game 1. How would you rank those 3 players in terms of importance to this team winning a finals?
Otto, GP2, and Andre, 1, 2, 3. Okay. I think Otto's been, he's the guy that can play the big four position. He can bang. Really, the big thing is he can bang down low, which I didn't see coming, because who the hell saw that coming from Otto Porter? If you've watched him, he was always a 3-and-D wing guy. I think part of it, he's just older and injured and slow now compared to when he was younger. So he has no choice but to be big, but he's so damn smart. He's like another version of Looney. You know that those two guys are under 27, 28 years old. Like, those guys are young.
I'm
older than those guys. Yeah, I feel like they're 34, yeah. Right? Yeah. And Steph's 34. Like, how does that make sense? None of that makes sense. But I think Otto would be the most important. Also, he rediscovered a shot against Dallas, which was cool to see. GB2, you're going to see him in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown's grill all game. In my opinion, neither of those two guys can dribble. That's why I think Boston can't really score. Yeah. So I think GP2 is going to have a fun time guarding those guys. Not to say that they're not good. They're obviously really good. But GP2 is going to have a fun time. And then Andre, it's more of a he's 38. I mean, he's a guy that I don't even think, even if he is healthy, can he actually be effective? But the Warriors had a lot of turnover issues against Memphis. So lengthy, so athletic. That's Boston. So I expect the Warriors to turn the ball over a lot against Boston. And they'll need Andre in there to kind of curtail that a little bit. So we'll see if he plays, man. But I think Andre's career is done. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the last 2 weeks of his playing career here. So hopefully he'll have a good showing and maybe stay healthy for that series.
So let's end here by looking into the future. You host a podcast called Light Years, and part of the idea with the Warriors being light years ahead of the league is that you're bridging the gap to the future with these draft picks from these last few years while competing for championships in the present. So based on what you've seen so far, how are you feeling about like Poole and Moody, Kuminga and Wiseman as like a future core of the Warriors?
Just a ridiculous plan to try to do. never. I mean, like we're talking about, you know, developing young guys, three, four. Like there's Wiseman who is street clothes, and yeah. Honestly, if he played, it'd probably be a bad thing for the Warriors. So it's probably good for the team that he's out. Four guys under 23 on this team, and only one of them is playing big minutes. Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it's working because, in my opinion, less so about Joe Lacob and Bob Myers, more so about Steph, Draymond, and Clay. I mean, yeah. Those guys are just good enough to where you can devise this plan. I think the true whether it be a success failure of this plan is probably 2-3 years from now, like when Steph is 36 and 37, when he's really like, okay, like Steph is nearing the end here. Is Jordan Poole and Kuminga going to be those guys that uplift him in the way that Kawhi did, right? So we'll see in 2-3 years. But obviously, Jordan Poole, breakout season, incredible stuff to where, guys, he was the worst player in the NBA, yeah. His rookie season. Like the worst. I was seeing him shoot shit off the side of the backboard. It was ridiculous to watch. Moses Moody, 19. Now, that's a guy I'm pretty sure is not 19. I'm pretty sure he's 29 because he doesn't make any mistakes on the court. Doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Don't make any mistakes. And then Kuminga is, in terms of the playoffs right now, probably the worst of the three, just because he's so athletic. He can pretty much do anything on the court. They haven't had that guy in forever, but he also doesn't know how to play basketball. So it's like, mm-hmm. It might be 2-3 years away for Kuminga. That's what the regular season is for. This is, it doesn't feel like this is a last dance for this team. And I think that's where, you know, in 2-3 years, Joe Lacob might come back and say like, hey, you idiots, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm making $35 million a home game again in the NBA Finals because of this, yeah. Right? So, but end of the day, I think for this season, it always comes down to those three guys. Which it just, I think as Warriors fans, you grew up with those guys. I remember, I think one thing that was cool last night, we saw Ayesha Curry with three kids. I remember the first Finals run, we were watching Riley. I was there. I was covering the team back then. I was at the game and. You would see Riley Curry, who was like, I don't know, like 2 years old, walking around, and she was like super tiny. And now you see her on TV. She's like, you know, she's like, I don't know, like 10 or something. Yeah. She's like, this is insane. Yeah. This is crazy to see that happen. And that's, you know, that's a cool thing about the Warriors, right?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly trivia show where Andrew goes head-to-head with a beat writer. In this case, his opponent is Andy Liu of the Light Years podcast. Andrew versus Andy.
What a battle.
Now, Andy, how this works is I've come up with 8 trivia questions about the Warriors. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. It'll correspond to a question, maybe easy, maybe hard. If you get it right, you'll get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew have a chance to steal for 1, and then we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So all I need from you is a number between 1 and 8.
Can I go with 8, or it has to be between?
Anyone. Yeah, you can go 8.
Okay, I'll go, God, I'm so bad at trivia. I'm kind of excited. I'll go with 8.
Okay, question number 8. Andre Iguodala has played 173 playoff games, which is second among active players. LeBron is number 1 with 266 playoff games. Who is third in playoff games among active players?
I mean, I want to say Steph, but I feel like that's the easy answer, and I'm racking my brain in the Eastern Conference to think of anyone. I'm going to go with Draymond Green.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Oh, boy.
Third most playoff games among active players. We have LeBron. Then you have Iggy.
Is this Udonis Haslam?
It is not Udonis Haslam. Andy, you had another guess?
I'm back. Chris Paul.
Also wrong.
Oh!
The correct answer, would you believe? Danny Green.
Wow.
Danny Green.
Wow. Across how many teams? 8 different teams?
Yeah, incredible.
Probably. Yeah.
Incredible.
All right, Andrew, you have control of the board. Score 0-0.
Number 1.
Question number 1. Jonathan Kuminga leads all rookies in playoff scoring this season with 83 points. Which rookie has scored the second most points this playoffs?
Oh, gosh. With that
another tough one. These are great questions.
Oh, this is ridiculous with these questions. Is it Herb?
I was gonna guess Herb Jones.
Is it Herb? It's not Herb.
No, it's not.
So Andy, you have a chance to steal for 1 point. If you think of another rookie in this playoffs who scored a lot of points, not as many as Kuminga, and I believe they scored 3 more points than Herb Jones.
So I was going to go Pelicans. I was going to go Pelicans because I was going to go. I got 2 names. I'll go Alvarado.
That is incorrect.
Oh no.
Who is it? I still have 1 more name. Oh, who is it?
Who's your other name?
Is it Moody?
It was Zaire Williams.
Zaire Williams, dang it.
For the Memphis Grizzlies.
I watched him. I was watching him making bullshit threes all series.
Well, this is an exciting 0-0 battle. Andy, you have control of the board.
We will go number 3.
Question number 3. Steph Curry has hit 533 pointers in his playoff career, number 1 all time in the NBA. We're going to try to name the other 9 players that make up the rest of the top 10 for playoff 3-pointers. Now, how this works, you're going to give me a name, then Andrew will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So you just have to give me someone who is in the top 10 all-time for playoff 3-pointers.
Okay, I'll go first.
Yeah.
I'll go Klay Thompson.
Klay Thompson, number 3 overall. Andrew?
Oh, I thought he was 2. Okay.
Ray Good. Allen?
Ray Allen, number 4.
Okay, I will go Ooh. Reggie Miller. No, James Harden. I guess I can't switch. But I guess both of them might be in the top 10.
I'll go with your second guess. James Harden is number 5.
Okay.
Back to Andrew.
Giving you one.
LeBron?
LeBron is number 2.
That's a good one.
Back to Andy.
I will now go back to Reggie Miller.
That is also correct. He was number 8. Back to Andrew. There's only 4 names left.
KD
in the top 10. Kevin Durant is number 6.
Ooh.
Back to Andy. We have 3 names left.
I will go with LeBron. Was such a good one. it really was, because he can't shoot, but he shoots so much.
Yeah.
Chris Paul.
CP3, that is incorrect.
Oh.
Andrew, any other names you want to throw out there? No extra points, but you could guess.
What about Danny Green?
Danny Green was number 9.
Wow.
Manu Ginobili, number 7.
Chauncey?
And number 10, beating out Kobe by, I believe, 2 or 3 3-pointers, J.R. Smith.
No.
Yeah.
Steph ruined the game. Steph really ruined the game. Incredible.
All right, Andrew, you have the 1-point lead and control of the board. Where would you like to go next?
Number 2.
Question number 2. In a closeout game 6 against the Grizzlies in the second round, Kevon Looney had 22 rebounds. Who was the last Warrior to have more than 22 rebounds in a single game, regular season or playoffs?
Holy smokes.
I think I saw this tweet pop up and I don't remember now.
And I will tell you, there were some guys that had exactly 22, but I'm looking for more than 22 in a game.
In the regular season for the Warriors or postseason.
Either. Yeah, either.
It could be either. I don't think I've ever seen a Warrior in my lifetime watching it. So this might predate my watching career. Like, this might be 1980s over here.
David Lee. Ooh.
David Lee, a great guess. He was one of the ones who had 22 rebounds, but he didn't have more than that. So, Andy, you have a chance to steal if you can think of a Warrior who had more than 22 rebounds in a game.
O'Donnell Foyle.
O'Donnell Foyle. What a pull. Well, this game happened in 2008 in a game against the Knicks. 11 points, 26 rebounds, one of my fantasy favorites, Andres Biedrins.
Oh, how did I not? How did I not go?
Wow. Before the free throws ruined his career. Man.
Wow.
Okay. So the score is still 1-0. So you're in this.
I got to get a point here.
You have control of the board.
Let's go 7. Get a point here. 7. Come on.
Okay. I'm feeling good about this one. As an example of how far the Warriors have come in a year, let's look back at last year's roster. Steph, Wiggins, and Jordan Poole were all in the Warriors' top 5 for shots attempted last year. Who were the other 2 Warriors in the top 5 for shots attempted on the team last season?
Throughout the entire season?
Yeah. So
Not per game. Just overall?
Yes, overall.
I think I could name the 2.
Okay.
You
have to give me both names. I won't tell you if one of them's correct.
I think I can name the 2. So you're saying it's Steph, it's Wiggins, and it's Poole. Those are the top 3.
They're in the top 3. They're in the top 5. These are other 2 in the top 5.
I know which 2 clowns are in the top. It's Kelly Oubre and Kent Bazemore, is it not?
That is correct.
Oh, God. Yeah. Those guys were a joy to watch last season, an absolute joy. Some things you can't remember, can't forget, gentlemen. It's those 2 guys chucking up dumb shots every game.
Well, Andy, you've pulled into the lead 2-1, but Andrew, you have controlled the board with 3 questions to go.
Number 4.
Question number 4. Golden State won their 6th Western Conference championship since Steph Curry was drafted on Thursday night. Since the Curry draft, Golden State has beaten 6 Western Conference franchises at least twice in the playoffs. To get the 2 points, you have to name 5 of them. If you get all 6, you get 3 points, Andrew.
Wow.
So you're just going to have to name 5 teams that they've beaten at least twice in the playoffs.
You can definitely get this.
These are all Western Conference teams, and you just have to get 5 of them. Actually, that sounds like a lot. So
it
does
feel like a lot.
And I'm not going to tell you if you're right or wrong.
You're not going
to
tell
me. We'll just count up to 5.
I mean, Andy knows them, so I can just talk. Rockets, Grizzlies.
Okay, you've given me 2. Need 3 more.
Clippers, Nuggets. I'm trying to remember if they played this. Mavs? Is that it?
Andrew, that is incorrect. So Andy will have a chance to steal. I'm not telling you how many Andrew got right or wrong. But he did not get five.
You're saying in the era of Steph, right? Yes. So Mavs and Clippers are not in there, I don't think. But you'd have the three. So you've got the Rockets. You've got, I forgot the other two that he mentioned, the Jazz and the Pelicans, Grizzlies. No, I lost count. So how many did I say? So Houston.
Well, we'll just start. Every time you name one, I'll tell you if it's right or wrong. So go with your best bets first.
Okay, so Houston for
that
sure.
That is correct.
What? Oh, fuck, man. I forgot what I said. Denver. Denver.
That is correct.
Yeah. Memphis.
That is correct. You've gotten 3 of 5.
The Pelicans.
Oh, that is correct.
I know the fifth one. Portland.
Okay, so you got that. Can you name all six? There's one more.
I might be stumped here because I don't have a team list and I don't want to cheat.
That's okay. I mean, you got the point. You stole it from Andrew.
I'll go Utah. I'll just go Utah. I think that's wrong, but I'll go
they
Utah.
They did beat Utah once. The other once team only. Was yeah. the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, I was thinking Spurs.
Who they beat twice?
I couldn't remember both times, so I didn't feel super confident. But
where were the when was the when yeah, was the two times?
Well, now that you're saying it out loud, now I'm
the
wondering.
Kawhi when Kawhi got hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kawhi one.
I
is
remember
the
that
one.
I don't remember.
Maybe they did
my brain for the other time.
They lost to San Antonio before.
Yeah, they lost in their first season.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, going through it real quick. They beat them 4-0 in 16-17. Oh, they beat them in the first round. Oh, that so 16-17, they beat them in the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And then the very next year, they won the first round series 4-1 against the Spurs. That wow. was that was the year when Kawhi got hurt, right? 17-18?
That was the year. No, 16-17 was when he got hurt. 17, man, it was so forgettable that 17-18. I forgot that they beat him in the first round.
And they actually won a game.
That was the year that the Warriors were kind of falling apart. The wheels were coming off, mm-hmm. but they still ended up winning the championship. Screwing around with the Spurs of the world.
The good news, you're up 3-1. You're up 2, and you have control of the board. You could shut it down right here, 5 or 6.
Can I shut it down at Chase like the Warriors? 3-1. We'll go number 5.
Question number 5. The Warriors had 4 players who averaged at least 17 points per game this season. There were only 2 other teams in the NBA who could say the same. Name them. I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer. Now, this isn't like, for instance, the Pacers had 5, but by the end of the season, Caris LeVert and Sabonis weren't on the team. So these are teams who, at the end of the season, had at least 4 players on their team who had averaged at least 17 points per game.
There were 2 teams that had that? That's surprising to me. Wow.
There were 2 teams.
Wow. Okay. Phoenix Suns.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal. Teams who had at least 4 guys scoring at least 17 points per game.
Memphis?
Also incorrect, Andrew. Oof. The teams
Charlotte?
Were... No, again. Toronto, Siakam, Van Vliet, Gary Trent Jr., OG. And then Philly, Embiid, Harden, Maxey, and Tobias Harris.
Never would have guessed them.
Now,
that's
what this
question.
Sets up, Andrew, you have a chance to tie the game on the last question. How many active players who were number one picks in the draft, and these are active players, mm-hmm. number one picks in the draft, have more career points than Andrew Wiggins? Now, before you answer... You can choose whether Andy answers first, and then you can go higher or lower. Or if you feel good about it, you can answer first. So you're just giving me the number.
The number of
active players who are number one picks who have more career points than Andrew Wiggins.
I'll let Andy pick the number.
Okay. So Andy, you get to pick the number.
I'm thinking of all the number one picks in my head right now. 3, 4... But we got some washed up number one picks, though. You know what I mean? like Blake Griffin is going to be one that's obviously a more points, more career points, right? Whatever. Let's go 4. That seems low, but let's go 4.
Andy says 4. Andrew, would you like to go higher or lower? Have there been more than 4 that scored more points than Andrew Wiggins?
I'll say higher.
Andrew goes higher. Correct answer? 7.
Oh,
yes. Andrew, you tie it up at the end. We have a draw. The names: John Wall, Derrick Rose. I guess John Wall is questionable as the active player, but he's still in the league. John Wall, yeah. Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, Dwight Howard, LeBron James. I actually thought it would be lower, which is why I originally asked the question. But then I was like, oh, there's actually a decent number.
Yeah, the more I thought about, I was gonna say 5 or 6, and then the more I thought about, I was like, there's just so many guys that probably, like John Wall, like completely washed. Dwight Howard completely washed.
Right,
but more points anyway. That was a good one.
Well, it's only right that a game show with an Andy and an Andrew ties. Andy, thanks so much for coming on the show. Go listen to the Light Years podcast. It's super fun, especially if you're a Warriors fan. You're not listening to it. Like, what are you doing? Follow him on Twitter at AndyKHLIU. Andy, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
Thanks again to Matt Babcock and to Andy Liu for joining the podcast. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We will read it right here on the show and mention your name, which is pretty cool. So go do that. Be sure to go to theathletic.com/NBA show as well and get The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. We really appreciate you guys listening. Enjoy the basketball this weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.